All right, let me jump on over here to the Right Side Way monologue. And I got to ask this question when I start off. Have you ever been around someone who claimed to be something that they weren't? Like they're just posers, just posturing for the moment, trying hard to portray themselves as something to fit their personal needs or their agenda, but they're really just kind of awful at it. And it's like painful to watch. And unfortunately, sometimes the posers create actual pain for everybody else. Like I remember once when I was a young officer assigned to the 20th Special Forces Group, we had a guy show up, report for duty from another of the Reserve Special Forces units. He was moving here from West Virginia, he said, to Alabama. Yay! He had been a member of the 19th Special Forces Group, he said. His uniform was basic, but he appeared to be what he said he was. He wore Staff Sergeant stripes. He had basic jump wings. He had a Special Forces tab on his shoulder. He knew all the right words. He claimed to be an 18 Delta, which is a Special Forces combat medic. And y'all, 18 Deltas are hard to come by. They're like unicorns. It takes an incredible amount of time to get somebody through the SF medic course. So when you have one walk in your door saying he's fully qualified, asking for a job, the short answer is typically yes. Now, I'll say this. For all of you out there listening right now that are younger than the age of 40, there was actually a day when we used this thing called paper. And we didn't have emails. And we actually had this giant thing called a phone book where you had to look up somebody's phone number, which, by the way, went to a landline phone that sat on someone's desk, and you had to hope they were actually at the desk to take the call when you called. So yeah, in those days, communication could take a bit longer. And when somebody transferred from one military unit to another, they had to have their file compiled, reviewed, processed, and then mailed by snail mail to the next gaining unit. So this guy who walked in the door with all the right badges and the qualifications, he said his file was on the way, and the unit let him start training. But then weird things would happen. There were times he didn't seem that proficient. There were times he didn't come across being as, you know, tactically sound as the others. And then someone began to take note that whenever we had a parachute jump that he was just not around. Something wasn't adding up. Well, then came that day we had a makeup jump scheduled at the last minute at Redstone Arsenal. It wasn't on the training calendar. It was added at the last minute, and the old boy showed up and immediately tried to say I got a bad ankle or something lame like that. But he was told, if you don't jump, you're going to be taken off of jump status altogether. So he shooted up, and he jumped. And while everyone else guided their way into the drop zone, this guy just floated off into the distance. Why? Because he had no idea what he was doing. He was a faker. He was a complete poser. He was Mr. Stolen Valor. He had no idea how to conduct an airborne operation. He just wanted to live the lie and get the notoriety, but he never wanted to do what it actually took to actually be that which he was claiming to be. And for 9 months, y'all, for 9 months, he trained and pretended and taught big talk, and then it all came crashing down to earth, like literally. But here's the thing. It was also really kind of a black mark on the unit. I mean, the unit took him in. They fell for it. In the eagerness to get another qualified SF medic, they adopted his lie without really checking it all out first, and by adopting the lie, it hurt the whole organization. Well, look, it's one thing to have someone like that lie to you, to pretend to be something so they can get something. It's quite another, though, when they're told they have to. Yeah, it's a whole different category of poser that is told to get out there and go pretend that you're something or someone so we can actually get something out of it, and it doesn't really fit. And what we're seeing right now in the Harris-Waltz campaign, y'all, it's an awful attempt to build up images that just don't fit reality. They are building an entire sector of their campaign for the presidency around the notion that young black men have to duty to vote for Harris, and that white dudes are all in for Harris, and that white chicks are like, oh, yay, this is the best thing since sliced bread. And what they're actually using to make this case are nothing but a bunch of race baiters and soy boys pretending to be something genuine and coming across as the cringiest batch of actors to ever hit the campaign trail. So start with this. A few days ago, the Democrats broke out Barack Obama. He hit the trail to make sure that the left knew that he was still the man, bebopping across the stage, high-fiving, being cool. Even though his hair has gone stone white, he still got out there and did all the cool talk and played the race card. Like, no fooling. You see, there's a real concern right now that the party of Uncle Joe, the pasty white guy who once said, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black, Well, the party of the Democrats, they've noticed the polls are showing their support among black voters is waning. Can't have that. Got to have some vote shaming now. Got to get the OG goat out there himself. So Obama stood in front of a group of black men and scolded them to their faces. Said he hadn't been seeing the energy from the brothers, he said, the brothers, about voting for Kamala. Don't they know she's a woman of color? She gets it. She knows life's hard. She's run the same streets, except she really hasn't. And oh, by the way, neither has he. Obama's an Ivy League graduate with mansions in the whitest of white areas like Martha's Vineyard. Harris is married to a white guy. But that's okay. The race baiters got a bait, even when they are not really what they pretend to be. And then there's white dudes for Harris. Ugh. An amalgam of white apologists who want the world to know how sorry they are for being born white and feeling that their penance should be that we must all turn our votes to Kamala Harris because it's just the right thing to do. When you're a white dude, I guess it's the right thing to do, they say. In the giant Zoom call that backfired with the general public, Pete Buttigieg told the world that, quote, men are more free when the leader of the free world supports access to birth control, said no real man ever. It went downhill from there. So much so that the Harris campaign has now tried in recent days to step up their game. Find some real men with some gravitas. Tell the world that real dudes are in. So they ran a commercial recently with men in the gym, men on the farm, men working on tractors. But they were saying things like, I can share my feelings. I can be emotional with my wife. The guy in the gym made sure we know that he can work out and still enjoy donuts. What? They went on to proclaim that they are not afraid of women. They want women to feel strong, empowered, and in charge of their own bodies. And the tiny boned man with the horse who looked like a good wind might blow him down, he posed with a Harris Waltz sign and proclaimed himself to be man enough to even help them win. Y'all, it was gross. It wasn't helpful. It was cringe. And oh, by the way, so what? People can be emotional with their wife and still recognize that Kamala Harris is a horrible candidate. And by the way, the word is out now that they were all actors. So, okay, soy boys unite. But look, it's no better on the female side with the identity politics scale being tipped in favor of Kamala Harris. White women for Harris is apparently another effort to co-opt the narrative. TikTok influencer Ariel Fodor recently hosted an online forum called White Women Enter the Call. And she kicked off the big Zoom call by advising her fellow white chicks to, quote, use their privilege to help out the sister of color. And then followed up by saying that they should all keep in mind that no white woman is ever to be caught correcting a black woman. I kid you not. Her actual quote was this. Here it is, quote, as a white woman, we need to use our privilege to make positive changes. If you find yourself talking over or speaking for BIPOC individuals or, God forbid, correcting them, just take a beat and instead put your listening ears on. Come on. So basically, the message here is that white women have had it good for far too long, and it's time they got on board with the BIPOC woman having her day in the Oval Office. And if they can't get on board with that, they can't be in the club. Okay, so what have we learned thus far with this campaign? Criticize Kamala Harris, you're racist. Doubt Kamala Harris, you're not really a man. Dislike Kamala Harris, you are privileged. Challenge Kamala Harris, well, you can't be in our club. I mean, here's my closing question. Where does this end? At what point are we going to stop with the race baiting and the fakers trying to pretend that something is something when it's not? I mean, should we next expect trannies for Harris? When do we get to see the separate Zoom call for Asians for Harris Waltz? Are they going to dare to have the illegal immigrants for Harris? You laugh, but just wait. Yeah, race baiters and soy boys. That's a sign of desperation in my view. It is unbecoming. It is fake. And we can all see it. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way. I'm ready. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Text lines just went bananas. So you guys are texting like crazy right now. If you want to text in, the number is 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text it or call it. Same number for both. Well, let me just, JP, I guess I better get a few of these right off the bat. Dave from Madison is texting you directly. Did you see that already?
I did see that one.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know what it means. Do you know what it means?
Well, I guess he's talking about during the Red River rivalry, or formerly known as Red River Shootout. Apparently, the commentators kept calling it the Red River rivalry over and over, which I did hear a couple
times.
Doing
the announcing or what?
Yeah. You know, that's hard. It's hard to say that over and over again. It's difficult. I feel bad for the commentators.
The Red River rivalry. Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting rabbits. All right, Cameron from Decatur says, even though I am up here in Decatur now, I grew up in Pike Road, Alabama, alongside the Barfoots. Oh, good. He said, looking forward to hearing your broadcast today. Tell him I said hi. Cameron, I appreciate that. I will endeavor to remember to do that. But, yeah, he's a good one. Will Barfoot is a good guy. Brian from Huntsville checks in, says, Obama stepping on the brothers. He says, Kamala Harris should have found Biden's corn pop to be her vice president candidate. I don't think that would have worked, because Corn Pop's a tough dude, carries a chain, bad guy. Yeah. David from Huntsville, long text. What's he say here? Quite possible the mainstream news media will change its tune in a second Trump term. They're obviously biased and full of vitriol against Trump, but they've been found out by the most fair-minded consumers of news. In order to survive and remain relevant, they're going to be compelled to return at least some semblance of objective and fair news reporting. I just can't believe we have another 4 years of constant unrelenting attacks. You know, it's funny you say that. So let me say this, David. You bring up a point. First of all, I think we need to pray in that vein, right? Not only do we want to see the Trump Vance ticket win, and what it does for the down ballot. You know, that we go Congress, Senate, and then the congressional races around, like for instance AL2 right here in Alabama. All the, not only do we want to see an overwhelming opportunity to take back our country by winning, but then we want to know that we're going to be allowed to govern. That's the thing. It's an important step that we've got to be able to take. We've got to get back to being able to govern. And elections have consequences. And we've got to be able to say, if the candidate who won, literally won, they should be then allowed to go forward and enact the agenda that the people voted them in for. Now, having said that, I get it. I'm not asking for kumbaya. I don't expect that to happen. But here's my point. What I remember distinctly was in 2010, when I was a part of the freshman class coming into the Alabama State Senate, we swept in a Republican supermajority in one night that had not existed for over 136 straight years. Democrats held the legislature for 136 years down in Montgomery. And in one night, we took it back. Well, for the next 4 years, we were assaulted constantly, especially by the teachers union. They hated us. I mean, it was constant haranguing. It was attacks. It was, you know, hit pieces in the news. And then we all won again in 2014, and it got quiet. Why? Because I think they realized it was legit. We were going to be here for a while. I'm hoping that happens again. Pray for it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. All right, listen, we're going to jump into this first dipper, regaining lost ground. Why is this important? So Trump has done some things that, well, Trump regularly does some things that people don't expect. I love the fact, too, that Trump has made it clear that he has not forgotten certain parts of the country which tend to vote blue. I mean, have you seen Kamala Harris come to a rally in Alabama? No. Has she been here? Certainly. She came down to the Selma March. Why? Because it was considered Democrat-friendly. It was a photo op. It was a kiss-the-ring moment. She had to be here to march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge and talk about racism in Alabama, which, by the way, we were the first state to begin eradicating racism. We are the cradle of the modern civil rights movement, as much as people don't want to remember that. That being said, Kamala's not coming down here and holding a rally. Why would that be? Because she's written us off. We're a red state. We're not going to give her the vote. She will not get electoral votes out of Alabama. So what's she doing? She is focusing on, which, by the way, is a typical strategy. She is focusing on the places where either A, she needs to catch the swing voters, or B, it's comfortable for the sound bites. What did Trump do? He went to Colorado, a blue state, to talk about the illegal immigrant activity in their state, and he's naming policies he's going to put in place because of what they're having to suffer in Colorado, and they loved him for it. And then what did he do over the weekend? He went to California. California? He went to California. Why? Because he went there to say, California is a jewel. We have not forgotten you, and we're going to restore this place to what it once was. And it resonated. Huge crowd turned out. Because, yes, there are actually going to wind up being conservatives out there in California. I was hoping to have one on the air today, but she's traveling today and couldn't make it in on the call. But we'll have her on again sometime soon. But you may recall a friend of mine, former state senator in California, Melissa Melendez. She and I met at a Club for Growth conference. And she's real clear about the fact that there's a lot of conservatives out there. There are. There are a lot of conservatives in California. They are overpowered by some of the more dynamically blue places like Los Angeles and San Francisco and Oakland. But nonetheless, they still exist. And Trump defied the odds and went there and held a massive rally. And I think what that clearly indicates is he has a more statesmanlike view of the United States. He's not just out there to get the assured votes. I mean, he's going to work in the places where he has to work. But he's making sure that people that are in and around the spots where it tends to stay blue, that they know that he's determined to be their president too. And that this is not a case of just simply writing them off because he can't get their vote. There's politicians, and then there's statesmen. Politicians go for the vote. Politicians go for the soundbite. Politicians go for the photo op. Statesmen go for what is best. Statesmen go for what is broader. Statesmen go for even the places where you would think that they wouldn't go because it's the right thing to do. I like that. I like that a lot. We're going to come back from this break, and we'll talk about that in more detail. Number one, Triple Dipper, regaining lost ground. That's where we are, and we'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, listen, on this first dipper, regaining lost ground. So if you haven't seen it yet or seen the clips of it, so like, for instance, I pulled this piece off Fox News. Trump went to California. And like I said right before the break, a lot of people looked at that and went, what? That's not what campaigns are all about. You got to go where you can get the votes. Not necessarily. A statesman goes where there's people. And yeah, I get it. He's got work to do in the battleground states. He's going to shore up his base in the red states. But there's blue states that also have a ton of conservatives, and they love knowing that they're going to be thought of, cared for, not forgotten in the process. And I'll say this. I think that also galvanizes people in the battleground states. When you have people in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the battleground state, saying, I don't know. I mean, is Trump going to follow through? And then they look over and realize, he just went to California. There are going to be people in Pennsylvania that are encouraged by Trump having gone to California. I mean, think about California. And by the way, I lived there for a brief period of time in my youth. It's the land of Reagan. It's the Golden State. It is absolutely a gem. Anybody who spent any time there cannot deny it is a gorgeous, beautiful state with you know, a landscape and a weather pattern that is just amazing. But it is also being run into the ground by liberal policies. It has got the highest debt for any state. It's got the highest level of illegal immigration. It's got the highest amount of homeless population. It's got the highest taxes. It's just unbelievable. It's got the most incredible liberal policies. Trump went there, and a piece here on Fox News says, with Election Day closing in, former President Donald Trump took a surprising tour to ultra-blue California. They touched down in the Coachella Valley. It says, voters in the decidedly blue state came out in droves, with Trump remarking on the sheer size of the crowds. And Trump highlighted California's failed policies. He said, I stand before you today in the heart of the majestic Coachella Valley to declare that the Republican Party will always put America first and lead us on to victories like you've never seen before, but because we've become the party of common sense. What a great line. Because in California, there are people that are literally living under a lack of common sense. It's like what is right is now wrong and wrong is now right. And you're just told to suck it up and drive on. Trump went on to say the radical left Democrats have destroyed the state, but we're going to save it. We're going to make it better than before. And then he brought up Kamala Harris because remember, she was the attorney general of the state of California. She wants to destroy our country like she did San Francisco, he said. And he went on to call California a paradise lost. He said, but we're going to bring it back. Don't you worry. We're bringing it back. It'll happen fast. We'll stop the murderers from coming in, the drug dealers. He went on to talk about how California was always a beacon of what our country aspired to be. And then he compared and contrasted. So what he did was two things. He reminded the nation of what a statesman looks like. He reminded the nation that you go to the places even where you're not as welcome, because that's what a statesman does. And then when he got there, oh, that's right. He's able to say, the stuff you're dealing with, crowd applauds. Kamala Harris used to be your attorney general. And before that, she was your district attorney of, you know, the San Francisco area. And oh, by the way, she was also your U.S. senator. She presided over your decline. He got to go there and not only see people that just love being seen for once, And he literally got to go there and, like, on her home turf, call her out in a hard way. I think it was epic. I think it was solid. I think it was the right thing to do. While he's there, by the way, he started pointing out some things that people in California are dealing with, like a guy named Eduardo Sarabia, who's an illegal immigrant who was recently arrested in L.A. After viciously raping two women. Illegal immigrant. He went on to talk about that. And then he talked about Victor Hernandez, a guy from El Salvador who escaped after committing crimes there, who was arrested in Maryland after murdering a lady named Rachel Marin. And he went on to say, my message to the American people is very simple. No person who's inflicted the violence and terror that harass that our states are having to be harassed with or unleashed on our country can ever be allowed to become president of the United States again. That's Kamala Harris, right there in her backyard. He called it her reign of terror, and he said, it ends when I take office. Listen, you can't tell me that wasn't a worthwhile moment. Is he going to win California? No. But he won the hearts of a lot of people in a lot of places because he went to California. And that's a big, big, hairy deal. When we get back, I'll tell you a few more pieces of it that are worth knowing, things that are just really kind of cool, to be honest. Like, do you know what A-list actor got out there on the stage with him? I'll tell you all about it. Phil Williams. Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on a Meatloaf Monday. I think we spent half the break talking about food.
I can always talk about food. I don't have an issue with that.
It was me. It was me doing it, though. I must be hungry or something. But I was so with JP being new to the area here where the Right Side Studios are, I'm trying to verse him up in all the restaurants around here. we got some good eating, and especially if you like good down-home eating. We got some good eating. Just saying. All right, so I'm going to keep working through a little bit more on this regaining of lost ground. Why is this important? First of all, because it's lost ground and we want to regain it. I mean, I think that's the obvious. Let's just be clear. I want California back. I did live there for a period of time. It was a tumultuous period in my life as a kid. I was a kid that was heading down some wrong paths, and I was not responding well to life in California. But it did not mean that I did not notice and still have great memories of what a beautiful, beautiful state it was. I mean, places like Huntington Beach were around where I was, the Laguna Hills. I mean, it was the rolling canyons. It was just everywhere you looked, it was just a gorgeous place. So much to offer. I want my California back. How about that? I want the country to take back that which we've lost. I want to know that I've got a president who has not written off whole sections of the country because they just don't fit the narrative, or they don't vote for him in the end. I want to know that I've got a president who's going to say, I'm going to do everything I can to bring back the California of old. What do you call it? A paradise lost. Well, there's a piece here on National Review about the rally that Trump held in California this past weekend. And he called it a sanctuary state for illegal immigrants. And he says in the rally, at one point, Trump said, we are known throughout the world right now as an occupied country, an occupied country. He says, we got people taking over parts of Colorado, too. We have people taking over other states. A lot of states don't want to talk about it because they're embarrassed. But it's no different than if they'd lost a war. Great point. And you know what? The people of California, especially the conservatives and the common sense individuals, even the common sense Democrats, are like, we got to do something different. And while the rally was kind of a get out the vote thing, they know they're not going to win the vote there, but they just prove that we haven't forgotten. And here's the thing. Kamala keeps trotting out, you know, her big hitter endorsements and, you know, people that are going to support her from Hollywood and wherever else. So the other day, not to be outdone, actor Dennis Quaid got on stage with Donald Trump. Dennis Quaid's been around Hollywood for a while. I like his stuff, too. I've always liked Dennis Quaid. I thought, even though I still really think that the best Doc Holliday is going to wind up being Val Kilmer, I thought Dennis Quaid did his own great job of playing Doc Holliday in the Kevin Costner flick about Wyatt Earp. Dennis Quaid's a great actor. But Dennis Quaid also just finished a movie about Ronald Reagan, which I still haven't seen yet. But I'm hearing it's a great biopic. I mean, just a great like documentary biography of the life of one of the greatest Republican leaders, maybe leaders, period, that we've had. Why'd I say maybe? One of the greatest leaders we've had in modern history. And Dennis Quaid himself got up on stage with Trump, and he told the crowd, it is time to pick a side. He said this. He said, God bless you. God bless America. He said, I'm here today to tell you it's time to pick a side. Are we going to be a nation that stands for the Constitution or for TikTok? Are we going to be a nation of law and order or wide open borders? Which is it? Because it's time to pick a side. That's a Hollywood A-lister saying this. And then he went on to say, he wants to go back to the place like where Reagan won California in 1980 in a landslide election. That's in my lifetime, y'all. I lived in California right around that time, as a matter of fact. When did I live in California? Yes, I did. I lived in California in 77, 78. And Reagan won California in a landslide in 1980. And Dennis Quaid said this. He says, the issues in 1980 were similar to what they are today. And he went on to say, we were a nation in decline. That's what they told us, he said. Ronald Reagan came along and said, no, we are not a nation in decline. We're going there. And we followed him. It's the same with Trump, he said. My favorite president of the 21st century. And he said, I'm going to ask you a question that Reagan asked America back then. I think it's a question that got him elected. He said, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Anybody with common sense is going to say, no, I'm not. Trump went out there, and he went out there on purpose. Regaining lost ground is important. I say regain. Listen, we've got to fight for California. Now, I'm an Alabama guy, but I'm a statesman. I want my country back. I want to know that the places that we have lost ground in, that we have a plan to get them back. It's going to take effort, but you know what? There was a time when people said in Alabama we would always be a Democrat state. In my lifetime, we were a Democrat state. We had very little Republican representation, and then we began to chink away at it. And the governor's race began to be a Republican race in my lifetime. I'm talking about in recent years. And then, lo and behold, I got to be a part in 2010 of the takeover of our state legislature. People said it could not happen, and we did it. And there's a great book, Mike Hubbard was Speaker of the House at the time. Mike Hubbard had a book put out afterwards called Storming the State House, and it was the roadmap for how he and Del Marsh and Billy Canary from the BCA and Governor Riley and several others, key leaders in the Republican side, they got together and they said, oh, by God, enough's enough. And they put together a campaign, they raised the money, and they went at it. And they took back a state that people said was going to have a Democrat legislature forever. 136 straight years we had a Democrat legislature in Alabama. Not just that, but a supermajority Democrat legislature controlled by the teachers union. And we took back ground that we had lost. And we got to do it again, you guys. I say do the same thing for Colorado. I say to do the same. I think we go in there and take back the rest of Arizona. Bring it back to the place when it used to be. Can we regain Washington State? What about Oregon? The Pacific Northwest is gorgeous. You ever spent any time out there? My gosh, what a gem, what a jewel. Why are we just ceding it away to the enemy? Why are we just saying, progressive left, you can have it. We're not going to fight for it anymore. Forget that. You go take back that which was lost. Solidify where we are and take back that which was lost. Now listen, there's going to be other things. I mean, in terms of regaining lost ground, our southern border has got to, that's got to be part of the lost ground. I'm not going to focus as much on this piece as I did on the state, but part of the lost ground we have right now is our southern border. And we've talked about it so much on this show. And we're going to keep on talking about it. But I will point out, though, that a story that just broke last night, Trump just received the unanimous endorsement from the Border Patrol. The Border Patrol Union has full-throated endorsement of Donald Trump. He went to a rally in Prescott Valley, Arizona on Sunday afternoon. And during the rally, Trump told the ground he was honored to receive the endorsement of the entire Union of Border Patrol Agents, the National Border Patrol Council. He said it was a great honor. It was said it was unanimous, thousands of people. And then he invited Paul Perez, the president of the National Border Council, on the stage. And Perez said he had a message for everyone in the audience. He said, quote, if we allow Border Czar Harris to win this election, then every city, every community in this great country is going to go to hell. He said the untold millions of people unvetted who she has allowed into this country that are committing murders, rapes, robberies, burglaries, every other crime, they will continue to put our country in peril. Only one man can fix that in this race. That's Donald J. Trump. He's always stood with the men and women to protect the border who put their lives on the line for the country. Listen, here's my point in that. We have not ceded our border, and we will take back lost ground. And there may be portions of Arizona where we have to fight to build the wall. But we're going to have to do it. Texas, you're going to have every bit of cooperation. Texas is going to embrace this. They're going to say, build it. But we have got to take back lost ground. We cannot say to the left, well, okay, that one over there is yours. We'll take this. No, it ain't like that. We're going to lock down what we got. And we're going to take back what we lost. Because that's the statesman-like view. That's the statesmanlike view. That's the view that says that our entire country is important. That's the view that says that, yes, there may be enclaves of red in the middle of a blue state, but you know what? We're going to go there and we're going to build out. And we're going to take back that which we have lost. Because if we start ceding ground, like literally saying, it's just not for us anymore. We're never going to get it back. Then you never will get it back. You're guaranteed to miss 100% of the targets you don't shoot at. I say we go for it. Lock it down on what we have and build out what we lost before and get it all back. That's my thought. All right, listen, we're going to switch gears here momentarily. Let's take a break right now there, JP. We'll get a few text messages and take us down to the bottom of the hour. And then I may call an audible here. We may jump on some jackassery coming up pretty soon. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Pulling pins on the truth grenades here today. So I'm going to be jumping over to the next part of the Triple Dipper. I'm going to stick with my order. I'm going to go with divisive concepts next. Before I do that, though, let me get some text messages from y'all. Jeffro from Indiana. Oh, he's not on the road today. Wow. He says, Phil, I wish I was on the road today. That old Mr. COVID visited my household. Oh, no. He said, so I'm sitting home, my dear wife, doing pretty good. No breathing problems. Just a little weak is all. Had a cold last week, COVID this week. When it rains, it pours. Jeffro, I'm sorry to hear it, man. Get well quickly. Get back on the road. The wheels of commerce need you. And some blessings on you. Lou Ann from Huntsville says, Phil, my acid test for election candidates over the past 20 years is, would you let candidate X hold your baby, daughter, or son? Said, I would not. I could not. I would not, could not let Kamala Harris hold my child as she is a very aggressive pro-abortion candidate. Her VP choice, Waltz, is also a, quote, good with potential. He's also good with infanticide after a failed abortion attempt. Kamala, I'm trying to read this. I don't know why it's hard for me to read this one. Kamala is not a mother. No, I will not allow a radical pro-choice candidate touch my child. A gift from God. Luann, I'm hearing it, and thank you very much. John from Harvest says, more people are seeing Harris for the terrible candidate she is, and the reasons why she was overwhelmingly rejected by Democrat primary voters when she ran in 2020. However, I have to stress, don't get cocky. Remember the, quote, red wave was supposed to happen in 2022? Yeah. It says, bring 10 people to the polls with you as we have to overcome the magic mail-in ballot machine. You make a great point, brother. So listen, John from Harvest is correct. Right now, the trending, the momentum is swinging to the red side, all right? Swinging to the Republican candidate in this. And that's great. But we've got a little over 3 weeks, and we cannot get complacent or cocky. Can't. Got to stay on task. Got to stay on mission. Got to run like you're 10 points behind the entire time. I'd rather be 10 points ahead running like I'm 10 points behind than to, you know, get cocky and drop the ball before you hit the end zone. So just go ahead and stay on task. And he's right. Take 10 people with you to the polls. Check and make sure your friends have actually, you know, signed up to vote. We are, let's see, I think we're a few days away from Alabama's last day to register your vote. Bryant from Huntsville, that's Bryant from Huntsville, says, have you seen the new Harris Waltz sign? This is real. What? Wow. Is that real? Do you think that's really real? Do you see that?
I don't know if that's an official Waltz Harris or Harris Waltz thing, but they got Harris Waltz on the flag, so.
Well, you know, we could gin that up, though, to sit here with a PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. But so for those of y'all that are like, what's he looking at? What's happening? All right, so the meme that we got is a, yeah, everybody knows about the Gadsden flag, the yellow don't tread on me flag, the snake, you know, the don't tread on me. And this one, you know, there's also the whole thing about cat ladies, right? That's been the whole thing, the childless cat ladies that J.D. Vance called out one time in a speech, and it became this viral moment. They tried to make it into their basket of deplorables moment, like with Hillary Clinton. It really hasn't stuck, but they're still trying. But this is a picture on the yellow background of a cat with a snake in its mouth saying, I'll tread wherever I want to, sweetie. Okay, that's kind of gross on a variety of levels. The very idea that they did that, if they did that and would feel good about it, just wow. What are you thinking? You gonna look it up and see if it's real?
I'm gonna do some investigating.
Do some sleuthing there first, JP. I want to know what you find. All right. Kimball from Harvest says, Phil, I lived in California. Spent a lot of time there. I think outside of Alabama, that's where I'd like to live. But it makes me sad to think of what has become of California. I'm proud of Trump for going there. Who knows, but for what it may be restored back to, a great state again. I pray for it and America. Kimball, great text. And yes, you are correct, sir. Well, listen, so we're going to jump into something here in a minute that unless you've got something, you holler at me if you got it.
Looks like it's official. The Kamala Harris official store is selling it. They're selling yard signs of it. And yeah, so that's looks just, like it's official.
Who's the cringe master over there?
So somebody, some Gen Zer within my generation thinks this is smart.
Somebody, but between that and these bozo ads they've got of the guys in the gym going, I know how to cry with my wife, and I'm voting for Kamala. I'm like, why would anybody go on a commercialist say that? I'm in touch with my feelings, and I'm going to vote for Kamala. Pete Buttigieg says that a real leader will allow for abortion and birth control. We need to embrace it. What are you doing?
This site's got a lot of good ones. There's one of a childless cat lady. Taylor Swift endorses Kamala Harris' flag, and it's just a picture of Taylor Swift holding a cat next to Kamala Harris on a flag.
Like, really? Mm-hmm. This is real. This is in the Kamala store.
Yep, the Kamala Harris official dot store is the website.
We need to like mock these. we need to order a batch of them and find a reason to like maybe put them out on the driving range and hit them with golf balls or something. Shoot them with guns. Who knows? Just put a few rounds through them. Plink in some target practice. Oh, look, we got the cat. Okay. Wow. Just like, wow. All right. Coming up next, we're going to switch gears. We're going to jump into a topic that is near and dear to my heart. How many times in the show we talked about critical race theory, ESG, diversity, equity, inclusion. When are we going to stop all this madness? Well, in Alabama, we passed a law. And we're going to talk about Senate Bill 129 that passed in the last legislative session. And coming up at the top of the hour, we'll have the bill sponsor himself on to give us some feedback on what it was like to debate it, what the arguments were against it. I mean, okay, so you're not allowed to assign fault or blame to someone because they were born with a certain skin color. And that's racy because of what? Yeah, that's what they literally had to pass a law to say. But it's because the left, even in the great state of Alabama, is doing all that it can to try and portray the world as being systemically racist. And never mind that, you know, you're actually putting things upon kids that they weren't even there for. How about this? Go back to teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic. That would be cool. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I mean it when I say it. I'm talking about Alabama, y'all. This show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gaston, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. All right, I'm gonna jump onto a topic. I will have to say, though, there's a bit of a breaking news today. It has been announced that Vice President Kamala Harris is going to do an interview with Fox News' Bret Baier on Wednesday. I'm assuming that's in a part of his special report. You know, he has the 5 to 6 o'clock hour. I don't know, your thoughts on this one?
You know, initially when I saw the news that she was coming on Fox News, I was worried that they would put her with, you know, somebody not...
like Juan Williams or something?
Yeah, like, because in my mind I was like, okay, the only reason she agreed to do this is if she got to handpick who it was. But now that I know it's Bret Baier, I feel a bit better about it because he's not going to be overly, you know, aggressive, but he's also going to be firm and not let her wiggle out of, you know, he will actually provide follow-up questions.
I think he will. And I think Bret Baier, you know, Bret Baier and Martha McCallum are considered to be the male-female counterparts that come at things with the most... And Shannon Bream, too, I think, from Fox, comes at things very reasonably, even-keeled. I mean, you've got great commentators like Sean Hannity and Jesse Waters and Laura Ingraham that do their thing, but they're also known for being, you know, so ardently in their positions that they'll almost fight you. Mm-hmm. And I get that. That's where I'm at, you know? Yeah. She's not going to want me to interview her, but the fact that she's going to go on Fox and be interviewed by Bret Baier, I actually trust Bret Baier to ask questions and follow-up questions, mm-hmm. and to probably have his stuff fact-checked before they get there.
I don't think this is a smart move from the Harris campaign.
You know, it's probably not. I wonder if they feel forced into it, though. Like we got to do something.
Well, I mean, truthfully, like, I don't think they're going to gain much from going off Fox News because they have the media in their back pocket as a whole. So they really can just run the campaign from a basement, unfortunately, like we've seen. And she's proven to be so bad with the media that if she's going to go with somebody like Bret Baier, I could see it being a train wreck, honestly. you know. So this is a sign of desperation from them. But, I mean, I think it's going to backfire.
And Bret Baier has called out the issues with like the debates not happening on Fox this year because him saying how the other networks have been so biased in their moderating of the debates that have happened, and then he also they've been calling out 60 Minutes who won't release the transcript of the 60 Minutes interview with Kamala Harris. So I'm thinking this is one that she's like probably having to practice for.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, that's going to happen on Wednesday. I look forward to how that goes. We'll probably pick it apart as part of the show on Thursday. All right. While you got your microphone on, hey, JP,
mm-hmm.
you're an Alabama guy,
mm-hmm.
as in University of. You're also a conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be chagrined to know that the founders of critical race theory actually are still professors at the University of Alabama?
You know, that doesn't surprise me to a certain extent, because I attended Alabama for a brief period of time, and from my experience down there, obviously majority of the people there, both professors and students, are conservative, but the ones who aren't are on the ultra liberal side.
The ones who aren't.
Yeah, the ones who aren't conservative, they're not just moderate, like, they are ultra liberal. So, you know, although it's disappointing, that doesn't really surprise me. And it's almost like they've built such a resentment towards the conservatives at the place that they feel like they have to go to the extreme end of creating critical race theory. But yeah, it, unfortunately, it doesn't surprise me to a certain extent.
Well, you know, it's interesting to hear you say that, because it does surprise me. First time I saw it, I was working at the Alabama Policy Institute when I first became aware of it, and I actually called the guy who was the legislative affairs guy that I knew still from the University of Alabama, and said, "Hey, are y'all aware?" And his response was, "What?" And I said, "Yes. I'm not going to tell you go fire him, but I just wondered if y'all were aware." Because it was when critical race theory was becoming, you know, all the discussion, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking back in like 2019 and 20 timeframe. All right, so for those who don't know, and we're going to get into this thing called divisive concepts here in a minute, because Alabama did pass a major piece of legislation that is considered to be one of the best in the nation for setting aside things like critical race theory and diversity, equity, and inclusion, and making them in some way a part of a taxpayer-funded entity at all. But you might want to know this, that right now, Richard Delgado, he's 82 years old, and he's been around, he's got some miles on him, but Richard Delgado is still a professor emeritus at the Alabama School of Law. And his wife, who goes by a different name, but it's his wife, Jean Stefancic, I believe is how you pronounce her name. The two of them are considered to be the founders of critical race theory as a educational tenet. They literally are the ones who, in the 70s and 80s, they were part of a small group of researchers who established the basic tenets of what we now call critical race theory. And there's an article on The Hill magazine that I'm looking at right now. This came out in 2021, I think. Am I looking back? Yeah, December of 2021. So I'm assuming he's still alive. He was 82 in 2021, so he's 85-ish now. But he was getting, you know, death threats, they said, and all that kind of stuff. But critical race theory has, to this day, become a rift in public policy. I'm talking like school boards, education personnel, parents, contentious debates among lawmakers. Critical race theory is basically the concept that there are those who are born oppressors, and there are those who are born oppressed, and it is the color of their skin that makes a difference. This is a part of what has led to diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, being all the rage. DEI has its roots in critical race theory. Washington State actually passed a law establishing professional training days for school staff to learn more about DEI. And it all stems from, you've got people like Richard Delgado and his wife, Jean Stefancic, who are still considered to be, you can look them up, still considered to be professor emeritus at the University of Alabama. I almost get, you know, you said this a minute ago, JP, that the ones who were liberal, they were like ultra liberal. I mean, they're like screamers, aren't they? They're the kind who, they're so embroiled in their liberalness that they could care less about the fact that they're in the red state of Alabama.
Well, I'll say this too, and I'm not trying to bury the university at all, but like this is part of the, like, this is just a insight into the people who are at the university who aren't conservative. When I did the orientation there, part of the introducing of yourself amongst the group was saying what your pronouns are.
Oh, come on.
So, although like I said, majority of the university is conservative and red state, that gives you a little peek into, you know, who the people aren't, who aren't conservative there. You know, they're full bought into it. The DEI, the pronouns and such. So,
I mean, the bottom line is it's amazing to me that an educational institution, one that teaches the liberal arts, which includes the English language, mm-hmm. will then co-opt the English language to conform to a liberal agenda. Mm-hmm. All right, listen, here's the thing. You got a bill that was passed in the Alabama legislature. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to have State Senator Will Barfoot on. And Will Barfoot hails, he's a Republican from the Pike Road area down there by Montgomery. And he carried a bill as the Senate sponsor. And he's also, by the way, the chairman of Senate Judiciary. I used to be the vice chairman of Senate Judiciary, which means he's got a position of authority and the capability to put things through the committee process better than most. But he had this bill that came out and is known now as the Divisive Concepts Bill. I'm looking at an article that came out in February of this year. I'm pulling this one from Alabama Reflector, which is not always a very, it's not a very conservative periodical. But Alabama Reflector has this article about the bill. And it says here that the bill does the following things. You ready? How crazy is this? Number one, that it establishes that by virtue of your race, color, religion, sex, ethnicity, or national origin, you are not inherently racist, sexist, or oppressive, either consciously or subconsciously. How about that? So basically the way you're born doesn't make you an oppressor? That's crazy. How about number two, that slavery and racism are aligned with the founding principles of the United States? You can't teach that. Really? We cannot teach that we were founded on. You can't teach the 1619 Project. You can't teach that slavery is the reason why America even exists. Really? Number three, you can't teach that fault, blame, or bias should be assigned to members of a race, color, religion, sex, ethnicity, or national origin just because of their race, color, religion, sex, ethnicity, or national origin. In other words, I can't look at you and say, well, since you're a white dude, I obviously know this about you already because you're a white dude. Anyway, it also goes on to say that it does not prohibit the objective teaching of divisive concepts, meaning slavery exists, teach it. Meaning that racism and the civil rights movement, it was a thing, teach it. Meaning that, yes, Governor Wallace stood in the state house, the schoolhouse door, teach it. But you know what? Make sure you cover down on the whole thing. No state, I'll say this with all the affirmation I can possibly muster. There is no state in the nation that has come further than the state of Alabama, in my opinion. We were the cradle of the Confederacy, and we became the cradle of the Civil Rights Movement. We were the place where the last slave ship known in U.S. history brought slaves down in the eastern shore of Mobile area. We're that state. And we were also the state where the civil rights movement under Martin Luther King was truly birthed, where you know, you got Rosa Parks refusing to sit in the back of the bus. Those all happened in Alabama. And so I'm saying that no state has come further. And we're also a state now that is passing bills saying, don't try and take us back there. The bill, by the way, the bill goes on to say that state agencies, local boards of education, public higher education institutions, they cannot sponsor DEI programs. They can't have physical offices that are for DEI. They can't have staffing for DEI. And the bill also says that higher education institutions, they cannot have... They cannot have transgender bathrooms. I love they threw that. I think they kind of threw that in at the last minute. Worked out for me. I tell you what, go ahead and let our caller know that we're going to have no choice but to take a break now because we're right up against it. But that we'll get him right. If he'll hold on during the break, we'll get him right afterwards. Anyway, we're going to take a break right now. We will take that break. We will come right back. And yeah, I got more. In fact, there's also some pushback on the fact that the bill just went into effect. Are liberals saying they don't want to do it? I'll tell you more. Phil Williams. Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, just making common sense like a superpower. Hey, by the way, quick shout out to Birdman. Birdman's birthday today. It's Birdman birthday, so happy birthday to you, Birdman. Those of y'all that know the show know we have a variety of different people contributing, and we got more, by the way, coming. We'll be announcing in the near future. But Birdman does one of our podcasts. His most recent edition came out Friday. It's called the Right Click Podcast. He does a great job of presenting sort of conservative content through the genre of gaming and tech stuff. And anyway, but today is his day of days. So happy birthday to the Birdman. Going to the phones real quick. He hung on during the break, so let me not make him wait longer. Hey, it's Sparky. Sparky from Harvest. How you doing, brother?
Hey, Phil. Great show today. And I thank you for the complimentary comments about the state of Alabama. We really have come the furthest, I think, in a lot of ways, from what people perceive as, you know, the dark days of the early civil rights. And I'm old enough to I remember whites only water fountains and such and that kind of thing. So, you know, it's in my distant memory, but it is a distant memory. It's a part of our history. As you said, teach the history of what was, what really was back then racism and is not now. Teach the people that are ignorant of this one fact. You know, there's more people in slavery on the planet Earth right now than have ever been in the entire history of the planet. Oh,
really? Wow. No, I did not know that.
Yeah, look that up.
Wow.
West Africa, a lot of the Arab nations, certain parts of Asia where you know, you and I aren't allowed to go. But there's literally more people in slavery. It'd be helpful to understand what sort of either ignorance, compliance, weakness, political power, and evil that contributes to the slavery that exists on Earth right now. Gosh, study that. Study that.
Yeah.
And then contrast that where our government has been trying to go under the current regime. And then go, there's some things going on here that we need to pay attention to.
Good call, man. Appreciate you, Spark. Thanks for holding on during the break, too. Appreciate that.
Appreciate you guys.
All right, see you, man. Yeah, that's a good word, man. That's a great word. And I'll tell you, too, this divisive concepts bill that we're talking about, and we're going to have a call in a few minutes with State Senator Will Barfoot, but this bill, it shouldn't be controversial to say, don't be controversial. I mean, And so I've got a piece here that came out of the Tuscaloosa News. One of the professors at University of Alabama wrote a piece. It's an opinion piece, and it's not bad. But I read it too, and I can see the veiled comments throughout. So Professor George Daniels, he teaches a course called the Race, Gender, and Media class, and he sort of takes issue without taking issue to the fact that this bill was passed into law. He says, basically, that now they're, you know, at the very least, he recognizes that they're allowed to teach as long as they teach things objectively. And he says, we can even put a statement upon our syllabus that says this class may present difficult, objectionable, or controversial topics for consideration, but we'll do so through an objective scholarly lens designed to encourage critical thinking. No student will be required to share their personal views. Those students may be required to share their personal views. No student will be required to assent or agree with any concept considered divisive under Alabama law. Okay, so they're putting that on the syllabus. Great. He also says, you know, because it's never been about indoctrination. It's always been about information and inspiration. Sure. Come on, professor. Please stop. Don't try and tell us that, well, that's never really been a problem. But now that you passed the law, we'll go ahead and we'll be good. That's kind of what he's saying is like, well, we haven't been a problem. Yes, you have. That's why we had to have the law in the first place. He goes on to say, though, that his race, gender, and media class is now the largest one he's ever had in the history of the course. He had to move to a different classroom that was bigger. More people wanted it because they need divisive content. I don't know what he's saying, but the bottom line is he's saying, well, even though we had to close down the DEI office, which, by the way, he was pleased to be a part of the strategic planning committee that recommended the creation of a diversity, equity, and inclusion office division just a few years ago in 2016. He says today that no unit no longer exists, but instead we have a division of opportunities, connections, and success. Whatever. If you could see me rolling my eye here, let me look at the camera for those of you who are watching online. I'm rolling my eyes big time. But he does go on to say that there's a reason why the classroom exists. And that he acknowledges the law. And I'm thinking what he's trying to do here is say, well, the law just went into effect, but, you know, it wasn't ever really a problem. Lawmakers apparently have a lot of influence. And he even says on here, students are now keenly aware of how much influence lawmakers can have. You know why? It's because they're lawmakers. That's why. I'm thinking that if Professor George Daniels wants to go run for the state senate, he can sure try. But I suspect he'll stay in academia where he's tenured. In the meantime, I will say this. At least he's noting the fact that the law exists, and he's moving forward. And that's what we got to have more of. Coming up next, we'll talk to the guy who put the bill in place, State Senator Will Barfoot. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, and oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three on Meatloaf Monday. I'm getting hungry thinking about it, but it's Meatloaf Monday, and we are finishing out this final hour right now in the topic called divisive concepts. It's the law that was passed earlier this year by the Alabama legislature, put us in position of being one of those in the nation that have finally taken a stand against the teaching of divisive concepts. And we've kind of talked a little bit here in the last little bit about what that means. But I thought what we'd best to do is go ahead and bring on the guy who carried the bill in the Alabama Senate. So State Senator Will Barfoot hails from the Pike Road area. He graduated from Auburn University in Montgomery with his bachelor's degree, got his law degree at Jones School of Law. He and his partner, Ben Schottaker, practiced law down yonder in that area. He has been real involved in the community for a number of years, even been a delegate to the National Republican Convention. And he currently was elected to the Alabama State Senate first in 2018 and is the chairman of the Senate. I meant Senate. And he's currently serving as the chairman of the Judiciary Committee for the Senate. I used to be the vice chair. And he's on the line right now. Senator Will Barfoot, how you doing?
Pretty good. I appreciate that introduction. I started thinking, who is that guy?
and I even pronounced your partner's law partner's name right, so that was good.
You got it right. I'll have to tell him. I'm most people don't get it right, but he'll appreciate it, and so do I.
Well, good enough. Appreciate you. And listen, you've carried some conservative bills in your time in the legislature already. But I think one of the ones that got the most attention, especially from the libs, is I think it's Senate Bill 129. Is that the way it was designated for the divisive concepts bill?
That's right. We passed that last session and became law. Governor signed it and became law October 1. So, almost 2 weeks ago now, working on 2 weeks. So that was a bill that, we'd the 2022 session, Representative Ed Oliver had it and passed the House, got up to the Senate. We got it out of committee, I believe, in 2022, and we weren't able to get a floor vote. And then the 2023 session, kind of the same thing. We came up a little short, and earlier this year we got it passed. So, I think it's ultimately good. I know it's ultimately good for the state of Alabama, and happy to talk about it.
Well, and this is one of those bills that it's amazing the amount of controversy it drew. I mean, the liberal media was all over you. I think y'all had public hearings on this one where people came and spoke against it, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, multiple hearings. For the life of me, I had people who came with me, who I know and friends with and or friendly with, and they read news articles, and I said, I can't believe that you would advocate for something along those lines. And I said, like what? Like, that we should treat everyone equal. We shouldn't demean somebody because of their race or sex. Or I said, what part of the bill that you've read, because I know you've read it coming to me, what part of the bill that you've read, it makes you feel that way? And they said, well, I hadn't read it. And on more than one occasion, I'd print it off. I said, here's your homework. Go read it. It's pretty short. It's about 10 pages. Go read it and come back and tell me what you find reprehensible about it. And some of them didn't come back, but the ones that did said, I read it and I see what you're saying. This is something we all ought to be behind, and I agree with that. So,
well, it should be common sense, and it's not just for schools. It's for state agencies overall, correct?
That is correct. State agencies, local boards of education, public institutions of higher learning. So, yeah, it affects more than just when we think about it. Typically, we think about, you know, in the school setting, but it also does affect those state agencies. So,
well, let me ask you, was there any, I mean, I know that, like, people don't realize sometimes you pass a law, they think it's going to go into effect that day, but you gave it until October 1st, and part of that was because it gave an opportunity for, like, for instance, let's say higher ed, to start putting the foundations in place to be able to comply with the law. Over the summer, we saw, like, for instance, University of Alabama, they started shutting down some offices, some of which it almost felt like they were doing a little bit out of spite. The Black Student Union, I think, at one point closed down. But nothing was ever designed to preclude somebody from existing on a campus, right?
Oh, that's entirely right. As a matter of fact, the bill lays out a whole host of exceptions, if you will, or nothing in this act prohibits, you know, A, B, C, or D. And you know, listen, we worked the best we could to make sure there were no unintended consequences. But, you know, when you go back to the divisive concepts part of the bill and how it defines divisive concepts or what the state agency or local board of education or public institution of higher education can't do, I had to challenge anyone out there to say, well, this is not well-founded, because, you know, we don't want to require students, employees, or contractors to, you know, have to participate in some type of DEI or compel somebody to personally affirm or adopt a divisive concept. And the list goes on. You know, and I told somebody, and many people actually, truth of the matter is, it in the 1960s, this might very well be the same type of piece of legislation that, you know, you would have seen from minority caucuses or through the civil rights type of legislation, because it is. It's just saying, hey, we're equal. Everybody's equal, and you can't compel somebody to basically or force somebody to assent to a divisive concept.
Well, and what a great point. I mean, I made a comment earlier in the show before you came on that, in my opinion, I know that Alabama has a past. I get that. I'm very aware of it. Teach it. Teach what has happened in the past, but make sure you teach objectively. And, oh, by the way, also teach both sides of the story. Part of the story for Alabama is that no state in the nation, in my opinion, has come further than Alabama has in terms of setting things right. And that gets overlooked too often in the debate.
Yeah, no question. As a matter of fact, there's a you know, a piece in there where nothing in this act shall prohibit, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it in front of me, but basically the teaching of history and historical context. And, you know, I said this on the floor, I said it in committee meetings, and my mama, you know, she died several years back when I was a much younger man. She had multiple sclerosis, but she was a history teacher. And if she thought that I was doing anything that would have prohibited the accurate teaching of history, then she would not have been happy. And so, you know, we need to teach the good, the bad, and the ugly about Alabama history, United States history. But we can't just sugarcoat some of it. We can't just, dump it on the ash piles of history and not talk about it. And we got to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And then therefore, once we do that, we can better figure out why we are the way we are and where we need to be as a society.
Well, and you're right, and I think it's an outstanding piece of legislation, and I think you even said it, maybe it was when we were talking offline before we came on the air, it's amazing that this was even controversial at all.
100%. I scratched my head and thought, you know, this has got to be a political, it has to be political to be against it for any other reason. I just couldn't figure out. And, you know, truth of the matter is, I was proud to work on it. The piece of legislation that passed has my name on it, but I'll give credit where credit's due. Representative Ed Oliver out of Dayville, worked countless hours on this for several years. Ed and I went up. We were invited to the NAACP summer meeting, state meeting up in Birmingham, probably 2 years ago. And it was, you know, we had some good discussion, dialogue, and I think, you know, quietly, there were a couple of people who came up afterwards and said, hey, I get where you're coming from. Not publicly, but privately. And so that was a good exchange overall. So.
Wow, very cool. Well, listen, I look for more stuff like this and appreciate the fact that y'all got it passed. But for now, State Senator Will Barfoot, thank you for carrying Senate Bill 129. You and Ed Oliver both, and the rest of the members of the body who voted for it. I know you had I think you had 20 sponsors at one point. But thanks for getting it passed, and let's keep it going, man.
Thank you, Phil. Appreciate you spreading the gospel out there.
All right, thanks. State Senator Will Barfoot from Pike Road, Republican chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. We'll have him on again sometime soon. All right, we're taking a break right now. JP, take us to the break, brother. We'll do that. We'll come right back, get some text messages, and start moving forward. And then I'm assuming I'm going to get to it. We got some jackassery we got to talk about. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, listen, we're gonna jump into this next dipper here. You know, we got our own dictionary here at Right Side Radio. We got words that they become part of the fabric of who we are. They are part of the lexicon of the right side vernacular. We got words like cacistocracy, which is a real word that means a government run by the least competent of its citizens. We got other stuff that we tend to say on a regular basis, but then we got one that basically we reserve for decisions made by people in official positions that you look at and go, well, that's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. That makes no sense. That did nothing good. That accomplished nothing but a virtue signal. And we like to refer to those as, with a sound effect, as jackassery. Oh, yeah, we got them. Oh, yeah. All right, so I'm looking right now at a live tweet. That's a long jackassery.
It really is.
That's a full-throated jackassery right there. So you'll be happy to know that Governor Tim Walz, state of Minnesota, just posted on his official Twitter account as governor that he has issued a proclamation naming Columbus Day, which is where we are right now, as Indigenous Peoples Day. He says, we honor and celebrate the 11 sovereign tribal nations and robust urban native communities? What does that mean? That enrich and strengthen our state's cultural landscape. Wait. I didn't even catch that until I'm just reading it now. What is a robust urban native community? Do we know? Do you have any idea? I'm getting the most droll look right now.
I have no idea what that could even mean.
There's a picture of the proclamation here. Let me see if it actually says on here what a urban, what does he call it? It just, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. All right, so first of all, the idea that we have not only 11 sovereign tribal nations, but that we have robust urban native communities that deserve to be recognized separately from everybody else, apparently.
But I'm assuming primarily Native American communities is the only thing I can think of.
I don't know. He goes on to say, Indigenous people have made a measurable contribution to the history, culture, and economy of Minnesota. I agree with that. I don't know. There's a rich Native American history going back 10,000 years. I get it. Okay. Anyway, the bottom line is there's been this movement today by liberals to not call it Christopher Columbus Day. Why? Well, because it's scary. It makes people feel left out, I guess. It defines history as being bound to a man who had colonial tendencies or something. We brought oppression to the shores. You know what? We would not be a nation with a First Amendment had we not first had a Christopher Columbus who came over here. Oh, by the way, statues of him been torn down. They've been relocated. He's been removed from the public square too often. And today, I'm just chagrined to bring to your attention that the United States Department of Defense itself issued a proclamation in support of Indigenous Personnel Day or Indigenous Peoples Day. Why? Because that's the most important thing for the Department of Defense that has our much vaunted U.S. military, because you don't want to take a chance of causing offense to anybody when you're like a military that's designed to kill and break things. Give me some jackassery on that one. That's just unbelievable. So yeah, just so you know, here on Right Side Radio, we're proud to say Happy Columbus Day. Hope a bunch of you guys got a day off. Banks are closed, courthouses are closed, government offices are closed, and they weren't closed because it was Indigenous Peoples Day. They're closed. Give them a separate day. You don't go rename the one that's already out there. And oh, by the way, since Congress enacted the Columbus Day holiday, don't you think you ought to work through the system maybe and change it if you don't like it? But no, They know they can't. Why? Because it's ridiculous, and because there are people of Italian and Spanish descent that will have a fit. So they won't go there. They'll just make sure they overbrand it. So that's what they do. Jackassery is when you don't really make a change. You just overbrand it. What does that mean? You put a brand on top of a brand. So as we go to this break, your first level of jackassery is the idea that Columbus Day is not allowed to happen. It's just Indigenous Peoples Day now, and apparently something to do with a robust urban native community, which I don't even know what that is. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. I got more. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I'm talking about this one, the one that I'm in. I love it. Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. I tell you what, I got several text messages on the Indigenous personnel thing, but let me jump on the phones real quick. Brian from Huntsville. Hey, Brian, how you doing, buddy?
Doing okay, especially after that bumper music that applies to your show. There's no one like you.
Thanks, man.
So at that point, Indigenous peoples and Native Americans and everything, many, many of the tribes would take slaves.
Yeah.
From the other tribes, and that would existed before Columbus.
Yeah.
And then at that point, if Columbus hadn't come over on behalf of Spain, the Spaniards were the ones that went in and conquered the area where the Aztecs were, in times of trouble, were making human sacrifices.
Mm.
So who did whom wrong?
Yeah.
That was my question.
Fair statement. Fair statement. Brian, thank you, buddy. Appreciate you. I tell you what, let me get a few text messages on the same thing. Brian makes the point. Did everything that came out of Columbus arriving, was it all bad? Is the fact that people can protest a Columbus statue now is based on the fact that we have a country that was birthed out of him originally finding this and it becoming a growth of the greatest country in the history of the world. The First Amendment was established. Now they want to protest using the First Amendment against the people who founded the country or brought the people here that founded the country. Anyway, you get my point. Glenn from Bluntsville, hunting FEMA workers has already been debunked. Thanks, Glenn. Appreciate it. And I had a feeling it had. Jeff P. from ARAB says, they said the hunting of FEMA members was debunked as false. Jeff P., thank you very much. That's two of you. Because of Mike from Florence. Okay, Mike, I can't. This is a long text. Talking about people buying votes. I'm not on that topic right now, so I have to come back to your text. He sends me a link to an article also. So, brother, thank you for the info. I will take a look at it and appreciate that. Got a brand new texter in the line about hunting FEMA workers. Maybe they're hunting for them because it's like trying to find Bigfoot. Okay. Tell us who you are, where you're from, so we can plug you in. I see JP's already sending the text back. Victor from Huntsville says, Phil, the DOD honors Indigenous People Day. General Custer could not be reached for comment. funny. Barry from Fultondale says, Phil, it is already Indigenous People's Day. It was on my calendar. That's on my wall at home. He's taking credit for it. Okay, I'm not sure where you bought your calendar because the actual federal holiday is still Columbus Day, but nonetheless, I get it. Rose Ellen from Harvest says, so Waltz is saying there's a community of Native Americans in one of Minnesota's cities where Native Americans are thriving. Does he mean financially, mentally, spiritually? What city would that be? I don't know. I don't know, Rose Ellen. I just don't know at all.
Which, by the way, if you recall, during 2020, during all the chaos that Wallace was letting take place within his state when they tore down protesters tore down a Christopher Columbus statue, and he went to the press and said, well, you can't blame them because they feel like they were right and they feel like Christopher Columbus is a genocidal character, so can you really blame them for tearing it down?
He said that, really?
Mm-hmm.
Waltz did?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. I remember when his wife apparently said, and I read it out, it was a quote on an interview she gave, that she kept the windows open in the governor's mansion because she could smell the tires burning at the riots, and that was like her touchstone to the moment.
Yeah.
Like, what?
It's just very, they want to call other people weird. I think that's a little weird.
Yeah, no doubt. Ken from Harvest says, hunting FEMA workers was a misunderstanding. The FEMA workers heard banjo music and just assumed it wouldn't end well. yeah, no doubt. Anybody who has ever seen the movie Deliverance is automatically having flashbacks. John from Harvest says, would it be impertinent to point out that in 1487, 5 years before Columbus's arrival, the Aztecs sacrificed as many as 84,000 men, women, and children at the rededication of their temple? Needless to say, Columbus Day is a bigger celebration in Latin America now. Wow. And then Chris from Gadsden says, Christopher Columbus was merely bringing a diverse group of immigrants to a new land. The indigenous people should embrace them. Nice. Well put, sir. All right, we're on this thing called jackassery. Jackassery being official acts by people in official positions that really reeks of no common sense or virtue signaling, and you wonder why they did it. There's Tim Walz again. Oh, Phil, is that twice in a row? Yes, it is. Story here from the Daily Signal. So, in a complete and utter and somewhat astonishing but yet not so surprising example of someone who does not understand the systems under which our governance is established, Tim Walz wants to be the vice president, believes we ought to abolish the Electoral College. Why do we have the Electoral College? So that people like you and I are not beholden strictly to what happens in New York City, Chicago, San Francisco, these liberal bastions where it literally dominates their state politics. If you go look at a map of blue and red, you will find that the vast majority of the deep blue occurs in these major metropolitan areas. The Electoral College was designed so that you would not have the politics of the nation be subjected to the politics of the big cities. In other words, the smaller states would have just as much say in the outcome as anybody. Now, we have fewer electoral votes, but what it basically says is a state casts its votes, and a state then has a say, as opposed to there's no way we're ever going to get anything done because the big metropolitan states with these major metro centers like New York and California and Ohio, you know, that Alabama and New Hampshire, we can't even get a word in. The Electoral College is supposed to be designed to level the playing field. Tim Walz recently comes out in a fundraiser with Governor Gavin Newsom. Whoo! There's a dynamic duo. Governor Gavin Newsom saying this. He said, quote, I think all of us know the Electoral College needs to go. We need a national popular vote, but that's just not the world we live in. Well, the only part of that he got right was saying that's not the world we live in. Hit me some jackassery. I mean, the guy is he wants to be the vice president of the United States. And he's saying that basically what has been an integral, time-tested system of selecting American presidents needs to be just done away with. Why? Because he knows that the best he might hope for is that they're going to get the popular vote, but they won't win the Electoral College. So I guarantee you, if they felt confident in the electoral vote, he wouldn't be saying that. Not at all. That, my friends, is jackassery. All right, how about this? You know, we had that divisive concepts discussion a while ago. Do you think it's necessary for police and fire departments to know basic math? That's not a trick question, by the way. I'm asking you, JP.
I think so.
I'm going to go ahead and hazard a yes.
Yeah.
If you got to know, like, you know, the amount of PSI of water pressure you got to have coming through a fire hose. Mm-hmm. If you got to know how many feet of hose you're going to need to get to the top of the six-story building. If you got to know things like which ladder, extension ladder you're going to need or how high the lift is going to be. If you know how many floors up that fire is, can your lift truck get that high? Can the ladder truck get that high? That's basic math,
so
right?
So basically the people who are supposed to protect us and then take out fires need to be competent is what you're saying.
In at least basic math, mm-hmm. I would think. Same with police. How fast were you going? You were going X number of miles per hour over the speed limit, sir. I'd like to see your license and registration, please. If you got somebody who has a state law that says if you steal, you know, less than this amount, it's a misdemeanor as opposed to a felony. Well, don't you think they need to be able to look at the amounts and decide whether you did or did not commit a felony? All right, I say all this because the Daily Wire has a piece. The Biden-Harris Department of Justice has undertaken a slew of lawsuits against local police and fire departments alleging that it is racist to now require new hires to know basic math. This is real. So on Friday, the Department of Justice filed a new lawsuit against South Bend, Indiana, saying that, quote, South Bend uses a written examination that discriminates against black applicants and physical fitness tests that discriminates against physical female applicants. It doesn't say anything about it. Basically, what it says is black people can't do math as good as white people. Women can't be as fit as men. And so they are actually suing. They've also done this in Durham, North Carolina. They actually settled. Durham, North Carolina had to settle with the Department of Justice, saying that blacks had failed their test to become a firefighter more often and that employers had to identify the disparate impacts on their race, and it was because of a basic math test. DOJ says the tests were not relevant to being a good firefighter. Listen, I was a pathfinder in the Army. We're the ones that, pathfinders are the ones that go out and set up the drop zones or bring in the airdrops of supplies and set up the helicopter landing zones, all that kind of under combat conditions and all that kind of stuff. I was the kid at Grissom High School where I went with your uncles, your uncle and your dad and all. I was the kid at Grissom High School was like, algebra's stupid. I'll never use algebra. And then I got to Pathfinder School and it was all algebra. Calculating distance equals knots times velocity to know where to put out a paratrooper is a big deal. You want to put somebody in the trees or on the drop zone? Algebra. Are they going to say it discriminated against people that wanted to be pathfinders that are black? I mean, that's the way they're headed right now.
And it's you mentioned it too. Whenever they have these arguments, they're kind of telling on themselves with their own racism because they're saying that black people can't do math as well as white people.
It's insulting.
Yeah.
It's absolutely insulting. Same is true with Cobb County, Georgia. The Department of Justice sued Cobb County, Georgia, right over there in Atlanta, saying that they used employment practices that disproportionately removed qualified African Americans. Why? Because they had to do a written exam. Huh. Because I guess the point they're trying to make is, listen, it's black people can't write as good as white people. This is awful. Maryland State Police had to pay $2.75 million after being sued by the Department of Justice under Biden-Harris because there were women who couldn't pass physical fitness tests, like being able to run, and blacks who couldn't pass a written test, they said. All said and done, what we're looking at here is an insult to people of race and gender not being qualified, not because they weren't qualified, but because they're saying, well, it's hard for them to do math, and so you need to give them a pass. Is that a jackassery? I'm pretty sure that deserved a jackassery. That's scary, man. That's just a mess. That's an absolute mess. How about this? Where am I on this one? Which one is this one? Hang on. Let me get this one. No, I'm going to do this one. Oh, which one do I want? I got a stack of them. Jackassery is everywhere you look. All God's children got to deal with some jackassery. Jackassery to the left of me. Jackassery to the right of me. Into the valley of death, rode the 600. Daily Caller. Dateline 2 days ago. Congress froze $1.5 million that the Biden-Harris administration wanted for LGBTQ initiatives overseas. Biden-Harris administration is going to spend it anyway. Because at a time when we're trying to rescue people from hurricanes in the Carolinas and Florida, Latin America needs some money for their LGBTQ communities. Just hit me some jackassery and call that one done. I'm done. I can't even do that one any further. That was just there. Take me to a break, JP, while I gather myself, because I'm going to have to come back and decide whether I'm going to talk about Oregon putting people like qualified job candidates out because of gender identity. Jackassery's everywhere, man. All God's children got to deal with some jackassery, but we call it like we see it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative. Just plain right. Making common sense like a superpower. So jackassery is where we've been, and we've had a lot of it. And I got more here on the desk. There's more jackassery than you can shake a stick at. I mean, it's just jackassery everywhere. So here's one for you from Fox News. Dateline yesterday. A top Oregon official has been put on leave for allegedly prioritizing actually qualified job candidates over those with just mere gender identity. So what we got here is Megan Doniker, who formerly served as the Oregon Department of Forestry's DEI strategy officer, complained about the agency's management, criticizing her boss, a guy named Mike Shaw, for looking beyond gender and identity into hiring, seeking only candidates most qualified for the job. Okay, so what you just heard there was exactly what DEI does. And this person is so blind, they can't even see what they just said. This is a person who served in the Oregon Department of Forestry. By the way, why does the Oregon Department of Forestry have to have its own DEI strategy officer? I know not why this is. That alone is jackassery. Thank you. Hit it. Go ahead. I see you reaching for the button. The fact that the forestry department has to have a DEI officer should tell you something right there. It's in Oregon. Can we please get our Oregon back? I want Oregon back. Thank you very much. I served with amazing guys from Oregon. 2nd of the 162nd Infantry. They were just amazing guys in Baghdad. I want Oregon back. But then goes on to say she actually filed her complaint and got Shaw, the dude, got put on administrative leave while they investigated her complaints. Among her complaints were the fact that there were 6 queer staffers who didn't feel safe or comfortable at work because they could not have a conversation around their pronouns, and the whole place felt like a boys' club. This is what DEI does. It's got nothing to do with trees. It's the Department of Forestry, but it's got nothing to do with trees. It's a holding spot for apparently employees who want to sit around and ruminate among themselves within their own little bubble, their own little sphere, about how they feel set upon by people who look at them and go, we don't understand why you're hiring qualified people when we've got gender identity people out there who just need to be cared for, and we got 6 of us who don't feel safe because we can't have conversations around our pronouns, is what they said. Hit me some jackassery. Just good. Let it play, man. Let that whole jackassery all the way out. You know, the guy came back and said, this makes no sense. And at one point in the article, I will say this. It says the pink-haired, tattooed Salem resident has left the department and now works as a DEI consultant. Oh, good. She's consulting with others to help, and she describes herself as an accomplice to marginalized communities. That's a person who's a career victim, is what that is. That is a career victim who embraces her victimhood and makes sure that she capitalizes on her victimhood and then drags people into her victimhood so that she can create more victims. That is what jackassery is all about. All right. My gosh. I had more. We're not going to get to it. I got more jackassery than you can swing a dead cat at. Oh, should I have said that? I don't know. All you cat people, forgive me. But the reality is the grades are in. John from Huntsville says, Phil gets an A++ for his spectacular performance. Today's Meatloaf Monday winner, though, is without a doubt JP with an A++ for his magnificent sound effect skills. He also is the winner of the Imaginary Golden Soundboard Award.
The Imaginary Golden Soundboard. I'm going to hang that up and stick it on my fridge.
Right, yeah, there. Exactly. Yes. With an imaginary magnet on your refrigerator. That's great. Brian from Huntsville did just check back in. Says Department of Forestry needs to remove DEI. Chop, chop. Oh, see what he did there? Nice. Well played, sir. Got a brand new texter in the line, Jen from Huntsville. We're glad you're in, Jen. Thanks so much. Says he listens every day at Research Park, and we're glad of it, Jen. Thanks for joining the text lines. Mike from Florence says, Dan Bongino explained the electoral vote today as short and simple as I've ever heard, saying what needs, it makes it happen. Bottom line is the way he said it makes his country a country instead of 50 individual countries. I like it. All right, you guys, listen, amazing show. Thank you for who you are. There are more of us than there are of them. God is still on his throne. Stay in the fight. We'll see you tomorrow.